Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. Calendar says today anyone may become a member of the household of God. And that's how we feel about you. We're all a family here, and we're so glad you could join us. Today is Sunday. You're welcome. Today is Sunday, April 7th, 2019. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America, and we welcome you all again. And we'll start this morning with our prayers.
This is Mrs. Eddy's prayer given at the Metaphysical College. It can be found in Mrs. Eddy's 6 Days of Revelation on page 171. It's the green book. Oh my God, I offer as a consecrated gift upon thine altar a heart dedicated to thy service, lips speaking only words of charity, love, and truth, thoughts striving to be only the true thoughts of the mind of God. Help me to endure unto the end, strong in the faith, powerful in the truth, all the influence that I can bring to bear, all the force of tongue or pen that is mine, I offer in thy service. May heaven help, consecrate, and accept.
Thank you. And Mary Baker Eddy, Miscellaneous Writings. We today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind. For then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. Okay, we will start this morning with our watching point.
Watch number 481. Watch that you realize that progress is the law of God. Hence, your trust in God must increase each day. You may start by considering God as a spare tire to be used in an emergency. Then you learn to use God most of the time, while you retain the human mind as a spare tire. The time must come, however, when you rely entirely on divine mind.
Thank you. Any comments on that?
Imagine.
Well, I think I was there. I would just, you know, turn to Christian Science and God when I had a real problem and I was really in trouble. And otherwise, I would just kind of go about my merry way. And I think I'm at that other stage now, but I'm definitely not in the final stage. Still work to do.
Well, thank you very much. Good, honest answer. Thank you. And remember, too, that progress is God's law. And be aware that you're making it every day. Because a lot of people, and I myself included, I'm just not making any progress. Well, you are malpracticing against yourself when you declare that. Did God say, Mary, you're not making any progress? What's the matter with you? God never says like that. But the point is, and what we're going to learn a lot more how to do today, is be aware of the reality of what's going on. And once you are aware of it, you will see you are making progress. Mrs. Eddy says, as long as you're working in the science, you're making progress. Just because maybe right you don't see the results right away that you would like to see does not mean you're not making progress. Every time you turn down an erroneous thought, and any time you stand up to error, you are making progress. Now, if you're not trying or you're not working at all, well, yeah, then you're not. But if you're working at it, you are. So don't declare against yourself. Anyone else? And you see, in declaring against saying that error is not what you're going to think, fighting for the truth, well, then you are getting out of this human sense of things and into the divine. So, any more comments?
Well, I'm very grateful for the fact that I do know that I'm making progress, even though I may not be seeing the outcome that I think I should have, and I'm learning step by step not to outline, to leave it to God's will and His time, and know that I am protected and all are protected in that time. And I'm also very grateful that I've learned that I can sincerely ask Him for help. And the watching point this week supported that. But my asking for help now is different than my asking for help before. So that's a very freeing feeling also.
Well, and that's wonderful. And what great progress that is. You're learning how to pray properly. That's wonderful. Thank you, Debbie. All these things are progress. And yes. Really, keep a notebook and write down the things you are having trouble with, and then the answer. And then as you see these things dissipate, you know, put some stars and hearts and thank you notes to God. Yippee, yahoo. You know, this is the awareness of His presence and power.
And I've also been working with the fact that I say to myself, I may not know what the answer is, but God knows what the answer is, and He will bring that to light. Be patient.
Yes, He will, and He does. Again, we're going to talk more about that today. I had turned to something in miscellany I thought was very interesting and applies to this lesson this week. It's on page 240. The higher criticism. An earnest student writes to me, would it be asking too much of you to explain more fully why you call Christian Science the higher criticism? I called Christian Science the higher criticism in my speech to the Message to the Mother Church, June 10, 1906, when I said, this science is a law of divine mind and ever-present help. Its presence is felt, for it acts and acts wisely, always unfolding the highway of hope, faith, understanding. I now repeat another proof, namely, that Christian Science is the higher criticism because it criticizes evil, disease, and death, all that is unlike good God, on a scriptural basis, and approves or disapproves according to the Word of God. So I love that, and that's what we're doing. When we stand up to error, we're criticizing it. And that's the only thing we ever should criticize, sin, disease, and death, because they're not real. And that's the higher criticism. Golden text, Hebrews 11. Through faith, we understand that the worlds were framed by the Word of God, so that things which are seen were not made of things which do appear. Now, this is a beautiful lesson on unreality written by Amanda, very well executed. And one thing that she is bringing out, the lesson is bringing out, that reality exists here and now. We have to have the eyes to see it, just as John did in Revelation. It's right here, right with us. And Parthen spoke to this, the responsive reading, how long halt ye between two opinions? If the Lord be God, follow Him. So, Mary, you want to read that?
Yeah.
Slowly, it's kind of deep.
This is from an unpublished early sermon on mental healing by Mrs. Eddy. He quotes, great epics begin with the appearing of a great truth. He who studies life aright never sneers at abstractions, the unseen principle of things. But proportionately as he sees the unseen, even the permanence of harmony, health, and happiness, he discerns the next great fact of mental science, namely, the transitoriness, yea, the unreality of discord, sickness, and sorrow, and build a befitting shrine for his own divinity, a healthy body to suit a healthy mind. Then life and its surroundings become a solid fact, a stubborn something amid these transitory nothings. And the gossamer thread of metaphysics, unraveled by science, is no longer a fine-spun tangle, fragile or obscure, but strengthens as mind in the ratio that it disappears as matter, and become the twisted cordage of invulnerable resistance with which our blessed Lord, the master metaphysician, drove out the seats of money changers, the traffickers in things without substance, without the realities of truth and science.
Now think about that. Drove out the money changers, the Christ, the false appearance, the negative human mind. And we must too, and we must do this in order to see the truth. It's all here and it exists. That's the reality. And in the lesson, that one story about Elisha and his servant, Elisha prayed and said, "Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see." And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots round about Elisha. Now, in Martha Wilcox's article on angels, she speaks of this too. She says they're timely, they're all around us all the time, but we are not aware of it, or some of us aren't. So today, I want pray you all get this better understanding of what is right here and right now. And in order to see it and to be aware of it, is something very important that you have to do. See, Jeffrey, will you read the Bible, citation 1, verse 15?
"For thus saith the Lord God, the Holy One of Israel, in returning and rest shall ye be saved. Quietness and in confidence shall be your strength."
As I mentioned in my forum in Clactania, Mrs. Eddy says that we must study to be quiet. I thought, well, that's peculiar. I mean, aren't you quiet when you're studying?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily. And if you sit still, have any of you ever done that, just to sit still and listen to God? Well, if you're not used to doing it, you'll be barraged with all kinds of thoughts and not about God or not from God, just what you have to do tomorrow or how upset you're feeling or all kinds of things. So this is a discipline. And part of our studying in the morning is studying to be quiet, because we have to be poised to see the reality. Do you think Jesus could have walked on the waves if he was all agitated and his thought was so poised on God? So start incorporating this into your life if you haven't already. Just this quiet listening. It's the most important exercise in order to see the reality that's going on all around us. Now, Linda had found something from this Anita Morjani. I had mentioned her in a roundtable a couple weeks ago. She's the woman who wrote Dying to Be Me, who, you know, she said she passed on cancer in the hospital, everyone in the hospital confirming it, gone to the other side, and then came back. And it's interesting, much of what she says, because it certainly goes along with science. And Florence, what did you say? You wrote me something that someone else had written you.
Oh, it's a friend of mine who read my book, and she said that she felt that I should meet this woman. This is about 5 years ago. She's her friend, supposedly, and I have never met her. I didn't follow up on that, but it's interesting to me that after she read what I wrote, she somehow connects what I wrote with what Miss Morjani has written. I guess the common sense of that is that there's some similarity in what this woman is saying. She really has seen the unreality of all this that goes on. We are sick, we are dying, all that. So I think that's where my friend was making the connection. It's interesting to me.
Thank you. She saw the unreality of all this that's going on. She sees it as belief. Now, we as scientists should be understanding this and accepting it. But many people who aren't scientists, it's a universal truth. They're understanding and accepting it. And here is one person that is. Now, I feel science is definitely the complete science. And I found in some instances where I thought she was getting off in New Age type things. And I might not agree with everything she says. And the only way I can know that is because I understand the science. If you don't understand the science, you'd have no basis for saying that.
But her experience can be explained by science.
Yes, with the right, the right scientific or Christianly scientific terms, I think.
Yeah, and the fact that she came back and wrote a book to tell people about it is very positive, very worthy on her part.
And also for the doubting people who have to have the medical proof of everything, she gives medical proof. Boy, does she give medical proof. I couldn't read a lot of the book because it was so medical, but, you know, she died. She was gone for a fairly long period of time. The doctors attested to this, and then she came back and found the cancer had not killed her. So in this, the question and answer article, but she says, I believe we are all connected to a source, a strength, or a force, but we don't realize it. We always have access to it and are never separate from it. Now, this is Mrs. Eddy's teaching on the oneness, isn't it? But we are taught to believe that we are separate and that God is separate from us. And we have to work at being more spiritual by following certain dogma or doctrines to access this force. When I was in the other realm, I realized that this force or strength that tops us up with energy is always there. It is always with me, and it is constantly flowing into me. But I had denied it. I had forgotten it because I was conditioned to ignore it and instead to focus on the outside world, the physical world. We get to condition to focus outside ourselves for all our answers, and we give our power to external teachers, leaders, religions, and so on. True spirituality is within us and will never leave us. It is always available for us to tap into. Now, isn't this what Mrs. Eddy has said over and over? Our yes. oneness, Christ Jesus, I and my Father are one. The Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works. The Father hath not left me alone. And yet, what she says it so well, we are conditioned to look everywhere else but here for the answers. And then she says, when people ask me how to access it, I invite them to stop seeking, stop searching for answers, stop researching, stop obsessing, just stop. When all the external noise stops, we will be able to hear the internal signs and messages.
Study to be quiet.
It is the most important thing you can do in your day. I know in one instance, one of Mrs. Eddy's students told her that she had a Science and Health next to her bedside, and Mrs. Eddy said, you know, it's much better, instead of being constantly reading all the time, but just have this time to commune with the Father. Demonstrate your oneness. Be still and know that I am God. When you do this more and more and more, you get to see the reality of life all around you, ever present. And you are less impressed with the beliefs of sin, disease, and death. That is also, at this point, seems to be all around us and ever-present. But so what are you looking at? What are you tuning into? As Elisha said, Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see.
Elisha didn't pray that God save them from this huge monster that was surrounding them. Elisha was already at one with God. He knew where his safety lied. It was his student that needed to see clearly.
And so are we all in touch with this truth. And to Mary's point, if we would do just that, we would see more of what's true. I think sometimes, and this is what I used to do, I read. But there's a danger in that, because reading with the subtle motive of finding a cure is really saying, I do have this. I'm carrying it along with me, and I'm looking for something to heal it. When I became aware of that, it made sense. Stop doing all that. How about really knowing that God is here? What claims to be is not. That was helpful.
Thank you. Mrs. Evans used to describe that situation as, you read in order to tune your violin. When you've got your violin tuned, then stop reading and start playing the violin. Start living your life, because it's through the living that you actually gain the understanding.
Yeah.
Reading has its place, but it's never a substitute for living.
And there are times in your life, I know there was times in my life when I was reading like a thirsty man, all of this quote, unauthorized literature was just so incredible to me. I could barely put it down. But then as you grow and the truths, they become you, they're in you, then perhaps you don't need to read as much, but you always need to be tuning your violin, because there's always a danger you're going to be out of tune and don't know it. So and then just stomp around out of tune.
Mm-hmm. Always clearly, I mean, yeah, reading, you can never stop reading. I mean, you just can't stop reading. But when you check why, and that's what I'm saying, because I used to, you know, I was or maybe this article will do it, or maybe this, you know, that's the point not to do.
Thank you. Yeah, and a very important one.
If I'm reading to know more of God, seek more, trust Him more, that was different, I think, is the conclusion I came to.
Yes. And God will guide you to the right things to read when you need to.
Yes, yes. And people say that. They just turn to something. Yeah. They turn to something and, wow, that's just the answer to their question or what they needed. And Mrs. Eddy did that, you know, throughout her lifetime. In the mornings, that's how she would turn to her Bible and get her answers. So, I don't think there'll ever be a time when we don't need to read or to listen to absorb these truths. Very important. And then you'll read, you can be reading the same thing and suddenly it'll have a different meaning to you as you grow. Science and health is a constant unfoldment. You never outgrow it.
Mrs. Eddy never outgrew it.
She studied it.
She studied her own textbook. Yeah. And she encouraged us to study it as well.
But there are times you turn off your devices, you turn off all of the noise and just commune in the lesson. It speaks of Jesus. Carol, you want to read 5 in the Bible, the first 3 verses?
And Jesus went forth and saw a great multitude, and was moved with compassion toward them, and he healed their sick. And straightway Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into a mountain apart to pray. And when the evening was come, he was there alone.
He was there alone. And you know, he spent many hours alone in prayer. It's recorded he would get up early and spend that time. That's a great quiet time, early in the morning. And it was after that alone time, then what did he do?
And he went and healed like nothing.
Yes, he would go and heal.
He went out and healed people.
Yep, and then he was able to walk on the water. And in Spurgeon's commentary on Matthew, he said, now that the crowd is gone, he can take his rest, and he finds it in prayer. He went up into a mountain apart in a place where he might speak aloud and not be overheard or disturbed. He communed with the Father alone. This was his refreshment and his delight. He continued therein till the thickest shade of night had gathered and the day was gone. Alone, yet not alone, he drank in new strength as he communed with his Father. He must have revealed this private matter to the recording evangelist, and surely it was with the intent that we should learn from his example. We cannot afford to be always in company, since even our blessed Lord felt that he must be alone. It was interesting, the other day we were at our favorite diner in Plainfield, Rise and Shine, and this very attractive young woman, she held the door open for us, and then she went and sat with, I don't know who he was, a boyfriend or friend or husband. But anyway, he was looking at his phone. And when she sat down, she got out her phone. They didn't even say hello. I was like enthralled at watching them. They just sat there looking at their phones. And then I began to feel sad because they looked so, well, she looked particularly very upset and angry. And I said, Jeremy, we need to go over and sit with them. So eventually they said a few words and she actually smiled, and that made me feel much better. But the most of that whole lunch, all they did was stare at their phone.
Maybe they came to settle a fight.
Something was happening. But this isn't the first time I've seen that kind of thing. And I know Suzanne, who had to take care of some teenagers for a few days, said that the school has admitted that this looking at phones and devices is an addiction.
Yeah, there's a movie out called Screenagers that they produced, and it shows the how these teenagers are addicted. At this high school where Alexia is, I walked down the hallway and looked in the classrooms when they have homeroom, and every child in there is on their phone. They don't speak to each other. They just look on their phones.
Wow, thank you, Wendy. I know Lillian's been talking about it for a while because she sees that we all see it, and we probably all do it, myself included. I mean, it seems like anything. You just Google things, find out answers, go to the church website, all kinds of things. But
walking down the street, you see people constantly going
on the phone. Yep. Please.
But when you ask them, when I ask her about her friends and ask her things like, oh, where is Kate going to college, she doesn't know, because I don't think they talk the way we used to talk to each other in high school.
Yeah, I used to get it for being on the phone too much, talking to my friends, so, but talking is good.
Mm-hmm.
So please, take it away, have time, and if you have younger children, don't get them started with it.
It's probably the same with, you know, teenagers or children talking to their parents, because I've seen that too in restaurants, and the parents on their phone, the children on their phone. So, I mean, what did you come for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'm in charge of technology for the district, and we're getting ready to open a new pre-K center for just the pre-K children. And they came to me and wanted to know what technology they needed to buy, because they want the kids to be on screens at, you know, 4 or 5 years old, and I don't agree with it.
Wow.
They want to get them addicted that young, and you see them in there with their parents in the restaurants, like you said, and these little ones are on there too, you know, with their phones or their iPads or.
Yeah, no, I know. We were at a restaurant a while ago, and I thought there was this little. He looked like he was two, maybe. I said, "Wow, that's the most well-behaved little boy. He's just sitting there so quietly." Well, it turned out he had an iPad and was watching something on his iPad, and that's their new babysitter. But please, it might be an easy out, but no, no, don't do it.
Yeah, the woman who is over that program. She talks about all the time about her grandson who's five, and he has an iPad, and he takes it everywhere with him. She said he even takes him to the bathroom, and
oh,
she thought that that was a good thing.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
It's a problem with adults, too. Yes, it is a problem with adults, too, so this is my...
Right. They reflect their parents.
Mm-hmm. They do.
So give the technology they need is a soccer ball.
Yeah, right, it's soccer ball.
So they can play together.
Mrs. Evans used to say that children need to go out, line the grass, look up at the stars or the clouds, or have time just to, you see, and when you're quiet like that, then you hear God. They can't be just filled with one activity to the next, nor can the parents. I mean, when we first met Jeremy and his daughter, that's how they were. They just were on all the time. They hardly spoke a word. And boy, has he changed, thank God. So if he can change, then anyone can change.
Yeah, in the movie Screenagers that we watched, they actually showed a place in Washington that they have now where these kids go who are teenagers that are addicted to their screens, and they actually go there, and there's no screens or any phones or any computers or anything, and they stay there, and they try to get them so that they're not hooked on their screen.
Thank you.
I mean, the whole thing of being addicted to things, well, are we surprised then that they turn to the drugs and stuff, you know?
It's all related. So, this is, again, alone with God. have time to be peaceful, quiet, listening, as well as studying to be quiet, but then be quiet. And you have to carve out time in your busy life to do this. Where is your priority? And that urgent thing, you know, he said the Christ loved it. And frankly, I've gotten where I love it too. You feel like you can't do without it, just like you wouldn't go, you know, a whole day without eating. You have to have it. It's vital to your well-being.
So we should be training our children to be addicted to God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the only addiction, the only habit we should have. Okay, Lillian, you read 4 in Science and Health, just the first. Well, you can read the whole thing. 4 in Science and Health.
The realization that all inharmony is unreal brings objects and thoughts into human view in their true light and presents them as beautiful and immortal. Harmony in man is as real and immortal as in music. Discord is unreal and mortal.
Thank you. No, that's all right. And Shardy, you brought out something very good. I thought about what this lesson was about and what was that.
Harmony. It's all over. And this is something that hit me last year. I have it in my post that I was reading this lady's writing, and there was a woman who healed just by using the following. This is a quote. There's nothing to do but to understand all is harmony always. And she didn't have a lot of training or anything. And she read Science and Health, and she did.
Wonderful. You see, you're declaring for what's true, and in the statement before, number 3, in Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy is saying, we learn in Christian Science that all inharmony of mortal mind or body is illusion, possessing neither reality nor identity, though seeming to be real and identical. Illusion, a false show by which a person is or may be deceived. Now, if you don't have this alone time with God and your prayerful study time, you're very easily deceived. So, remember this and value and treasure that time. And, Jeremy, I'm so excited today. Today, the group is singing. Yeah, touched by the hand of the master.
Touch, yeah.
Anyway, it was the poem that Parthens had sent on the forum a few weeks. Well, some of you have sent me music to it. Thank you. And I sent that to the musicians, so they're singing it today. And dear Jeremy, who owns about 5 guitars, he's accompanying on the guitar. Anyway, so that should be, we've been practicing it very diligently. Anyway, where was it going? So, he's not here today. So his forum, he speaks about, before coming here, I had no idea how to distinguish veritable ideas from illusions. That's another quote in Science and Health number 9. Now I feel I have the tools to know the difference, and because of that, my ability to recognize God's goodness has become increasingly fine-tuned. With the recognition, thanksgiving has become an integral part of my day. This seems to be the lattice upon which my joy and all the fruit of the Spirit are growing.
Beautiful.
Yes. It is your gratitude for the veritable ideas that you're seeing. Your gratitude for truth, life, and love that enables you to see more and more of it. So if you think you can't see it, maybe you're not grateful for it. It's all around you. And even when it appears not to be, in that very place where it appears not to be, it is. And that's how Jesus healed the sick, and that's the quote that Shardy just gave us. Harmony is real.
And this person knew, beyond a doubt, that harmony is real. It was something that she was grateful for and acknowledged. And that one truth was able to heal. And that's the wonder. That's the wonder of this science. You don't have to know everything that there is to know about everything. You just have to know one truth so clearly, so well, and be so grateful for it, that it brings healing in your life.
That, you know, this week for about an hour, and I know I gave it to some of you, but it was on page 248 in Science and Health. Just think of this. Men and women of riper years and larger lessons ought to ripen into health and immortality instead of lapsing into darkness or gloom. Immortal mind feeds the body with supernal freshness and fairness, supplying it with beautiful images of thought and destroying the woes of sense which each day brings to a nearer tomb. Just think of that. We all should be ripening into health and immortality. We should be getting healthier, our lives expanded, our longevity.
Because when you're grateful for life, you're grateful for truth, and you're grateful for love, it feeds your body. It heals.
It can do
no other.
And the mind, feeding the body with mind with a capital M, feeding your body. So how can you be too fat, too thin, have digestive problems? Mind is feeding your body. And what is it feeding it with? Supernal freshness and fairness. So what's troubling you, brother? Let this heal it. And with that, it's supplying you with beautiful images of thought. Just take one statement like that and think about it. Dwell on it. Let God speak to you about it. It's so healing and refreshing. Why not do that than be glued to your TV or something else?
Your iPad.
iPad.
Yes. And then that citation 10, where human sense may well marvel at discord, and while to the diviner sense harmony is the real and the discord is the unreal, and then why should we stand aghast at nothingness? And then the breaking up of material beliefs may seem to be famine and pestilence, want and woe, sin, sickness, and death, which assume new phases until their nothingness appears. So no matter what seems so troublesome, it's all on its way out. It's come to pass. Gary and I were watching, there was an interview on television with this the wife of the American sniper. It was a movie. It was about someone who helped bring down the Taliban and survived tremendous odds, and then coming back home, he was
trying to help someone, and who he was trying to help murdered him.
And so it was talking to his widow, and she was a very faith-based person, and everything she said, you know, that whatever she was saying, trials are proofs of God's care. That's what she was saying. And she said, if you're going through a trial, just keep walking through, just like we've talked to, that it'll bring great blessings. And she's written a book about the American spirit in which she portrays this, all the wonderful things that have happened through things that didn't seem so great. She's always told that she has three beautiful children. She's always said, oh my goodness, you have such beautiful, good children. How is this? And again, she says, well, they went through a lot, and because they went through a lot, it made them strong. And of course, you can tell, she's teaching them about God and the Bible. She has a strong faith. So, never despair when things seem to be at its worst. It's the breaking up of the material beliefs. And that's a good thing. It's chemicalization. It's coming out to the surface. Like last week's watching point. Better to get it out than to have it sneaking around, hidden and undercover, which is how ERA likes to work. Now that it's out in the open, it's ha, 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 ha. And now we get to Florence's and Linda's. We simply cannot allow the unreal to abide in our thinking. So, Florence, what did you say about that? Very important.
Is Mrs. Eddy's quote in, allow nothing but his likeness to abide in thy thought. I thought, well, that says it all. I mean, it relates to what we've been saying so far, too, that if we allow the good to dwell in our thinking, then that's your experience. I think I've heard many times it says that you see what you believe. So if we don't carry all these wrong thoughts in our thinking and allow them to keep, you know, expanding themselves in there, then we are replacing them with the truth, and the truth becomes our experience, essentially what it's saying. And I like the fact that we've been given in the Bible the things of spirit and the contrast, which is this, the evil things that we can dwell on. And I was just referring to them, and I think the word hatred somehow stood out this week, so, because even though we don't search the internet for different things, you know, this and that, it's important, and I've learned here also, to look up certain words, because the word hatred, for example, can go undetected and ignored and kept in thought. And the synonyms are amazing. Loathing, detestation, dislike, distaste, abomination, resentment, revulsion, it just goes on. And just to be aware of what these words mean and not allow any of it to remain in our thought is very essential. I mean, it's just something we must do so that we are filled with the truth, with God, and our experiences are different. It tells us that the good, the things of God, the fruit of the Spirit, is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. And against such, there is no law. So if we keep the good things in our thinking, we are obeying the law, and we can't but be rewarded for it, essentially is what I was saying.
Thank you very much. You know, and Mrs. Evans would tell this story when she was in her practitioner's office. Nana Ritchie, her name was. And Mrs. Evans said she learned everything from Nana Ritchie. And Mrs. Evans was complaining about something. And right? And anyway, Nana Ritchie says, sounds like you hate that person. And Mrs. Evans said, oh, no, I don't hate, I don't like her, but I don't hate her. And Nana Ritchie said, if you don't like her, you hate her, like that. And Mrs. Evans said that really woke her up, and that is a lot of Florence's point. All these little things you think are okay, you don't like somebody or you have a little resentment towards somebody, all of that stuff is hate. You can't make it nice. And that was the point of this story from Mrs. Evans, and it made a huge impression on me, because you have to go over your thoughts. And Florence brings out indifference. We were also taught a story about babies, right? When they were born, when they were ignored and people were indifferent, they began to languish. Indifference is one of the worst forms of hate. Just say, I don't care. Well, if you don't care, you don't love. And if you don't love, you hate.
I was going to say the same thing that really impressed me, what Mrs. Evans said, and she would add, there's no such thing as being a little pregnant.
Right. There's nothing in between.
Yes.
No yes. Gray zones.
And so when you're struggling with problems and you're failing to see the reality of things, well, go into your closet, get quiet, and purge and cleanse yourself, and that's what Linda wrote to, right? Purging.
Purging, which means to remove, get rid of.
all those kind of thoughts. So the love of God can fill your thought, and you can see reality just all around us. So we will end with, in Miscellany, one of our favorites, What Our Leader Says.
This is page 210. What Our Leader Says. Beloved Christian Scientist, keep your minds so filled with truth and love that sin, disease, and death cannot enter them. It is plain that nothing can be added to the mind already full. There is no door through which evil can enter, and no space for evil to fill in a mind filled with goodness. Good thoughts are an impervious armor. Clad therewith, you are completely shielded from the attacks of error of every sort. And not only yourselves are safe, but all whom your thoughts rest upon are thereby benefited. The self-seeking pride of the evil thinker injures him when he would harm others. Goodness involuntarily resists evil. The evil thinker is the proud talker and doer. The right thinker abides under the shadow of the Almighty. His thoughts can only reflect peace, goodwill towards men, health, and holiness.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.